The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.
Wrestling to the Max. SmackDown. Review.
Hello and welcome to the Wrestling to the Max WWE SmackDown Live review for July 18th, 2017. And this, of course, is the Go Home edition of SmackDown Live heading into the WWE Battleground 2017 pay-per-view that is taking place on Sunday. Many matches were progressed for that show on this show, as should happen on a go-home show. And, of course, with me for the second week in a row, and probably looks like, barring an emergency fill-in needed, going to be my permanent co-host here, Mr. Harry Broadhurst.
Good evening, Sean. Glad to be a part of the W2M SmackDown crew.
Yeah, I was thinking about it yesterday because, Gary, I couldn't be on. I have to take Raw off now because of doing the football show at the same time, so that, you know, we can actually sleep and not always have to be getting done like 4 or 5 in the morning. Now that Randy's not part of it either, we no longer have the option of doing it after the wrestling shows either, like we used to. So, they talked a lot about me doing a bunch of stuff and then having nights off. I fell asleep trying to watch the G1 night one, and didn't get to do the regular WWE either. So I said, you know what, Paul never gets a night off. He's the only one that doesn't get a show off. You know, SmackDown and 205 Gary already gets off normally. And so I was like, you know what, I think Harry's usually available. We need to find a way to give Paul a night off. And so we kind of decided that Harry will just join me for these, so that each one of us at least has one show that we don't have to do. And in this case, Paul doing two shows. But, yeah. So, of course, we'll be doing SmackDown here. We'll be doing 205. And Paul and I will also reunite to do night one of the G1. So, plenty of stuff for you on that Wednesday morning on-demand download there. Let's go ahead and get started here, Harry, for SmackDown this evening.
And can I ask a quick question before we get started?
Yes, go ahead.
Are we going to do Battleground predictions as well, or are you guys going to save your predictions for Battleground for the W2M episode tomorrow?
Yeah, we do those on episode part two. We don't really ever do them here on the... you can give yours really quick at the end there if you want. That's fine.
I'll just plug the other show that I do that has my predictions for this Sunday's pay-per-view at the end of this podcast.
That's fine. So, right. They start off here with, of course, last week, our WWE champion, the modern-day Maharaja, Jinder Mahal, announced that he was bringing the Punjabi prison with him to this show, and that he indeed does, as we get to see them lower it and put both the inner cage and the outer cage on it. As, Mahal talks about, this prison is going to be the final resting place of Orton's legacy. The Singh brothers talk about what you do, which I think actually this is a good idea because it's been so long. It's been almost 10 years since they've done this this match, and it's actually good that they take the time the show before to explain to you what the rules are. I'd forgotten. I haven't watched these matches in a long time, which, if in case you're listening and you don't understand what these rules are, the inner cage is four doors. The referee opens the door for a minute. So you have a minute to get out of the inner cage, and then you have to climb over the outer cage and get out that way like a regular cage would. So that basically you have to get out of both cages. There is no pinning anyone. There is no submitting anyone. Lots of, I'm sure, close where you're going to see someone grab someone before they get out. How much is another situation where the Singh brothers can have a lot of involvement here. Of course, Randy Orton eventually does come out, and he talks about how basically, you know, and this is true, they don't bring this up very often, Mahal has a lot of weight on his shoulders. With all of India watching, you're going to be a disgrace if you lose. And basically, Orton says, look, I'm going to leave you for dead, and I am going to be the new WWE champion. It's the general opening seven for a WWE show, but I thought they did pretty well.
Yeah, I agree with that. The big thing for me was giving everybody a chance to see on free television. Well, I mean, free technically, I guess, without using the network or having to purchase the pay-per-view. Getting everybody a reminder, or in a lot of the newer fans' cases, an actual visualization of what the Punjabi prison looks like. The big thing for me is going to be the fact is that I'm not expecting a good match here, though. And I think you have to have those kind of expectations going into this match. These are probably the two best athletes to ever step into the Punjabi prison in regards to pure athleticism. Taker's a good athlete for a big guy, but he was in there with the Big Show. There's only so much you can do.
Right.
Batista is an okay-ish athlete. Kali is an oaf.
Right. I think they have a better chance at having the best Punjabi prison match, and if they just have a good match, I think that's fine. You know, I don't think anybody's been expecting much of anything for this. I think their second match eclipsed the first one, and I don't know if this is going to be able to eclipse that. But
yeah, I would have had both of the first two matches around 3.5 stars or so. This one right here, I'm expecting 2.5, and if it's anything greater than that, I'll be happy.
I think they'll reach the 3. You know, there's a lot they can do there with, you know, someone jumping off the one of the sides, or, you know,
like Batista did.
Right, exactly. Or one of the Singh brothers doing something crazy and getting RKO'd off the top there, or just a lot of stuff they could do. They could get weapons involved like Batista and Kali did as well to make it crazier. So and with the Singh brothers being there, I wouldn't be surprised if they do.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't be surprised to see weapons get involved once they make it out to the floor outside of the actual enclosed ring, because I think that the cage itself is big enough for the Singh brothers to hand stuff to Mahal once they're out on the floor.
Right.
This is assuming that the Singh brothers are entirely out of the surrounding cage as well, though. I mean, they may be in the inner cage, so we don't know what's going to happen there.
Yeah, I mean, that's one we're going to have to see how much. Of course, once they open the door, they can move freely as well, going back and forth, so you know, they could start inside, go outside, all that kind of stuff. It's lots of possibilities for them there. I'm just kind of intrigued to see what happens. And you think that Jinder would win this being his match and all, and this kind of finally closes the book on Orton, especially because Orton's supposed to be going on a little bit of a vacay. So, you know.
You guys will have more of your predictions tomorrow night, and then obviously I'll be plugging my predictions right now. But long story short, yeah, Mahal retains on Sunday.
Yeah, and they go from that opening segment here to another feud that's been going on for a little bit, New Day and Usos. And, of course, Jimmy Uso and Kofi Kingston have the first match of the evening. This was your just, you know, a good match that goes about close to 10 minutes. I didn't think it was anything too special. The heels win, which is good for both Jimmy and Jay. And, yeah, I mean,
Well, once Xavier got the pinfall on Jay last week, you kind of had to figure that Jimmy was going to get the win this week, because you know how the 50-50 booking goes in this company.
Not all the time, though. We have seen that they will have, at times, both singles guy, both guys from one team win singles, but then they lose the tag match.
Yeah, but I think this is one of those evenly contested tag matches where they really don't want to put any kind of disparity between the two teams, because they were so evenly matched at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view as well.
Oh, I totally get you. I think for this, it makes sense for both of them. I'm just saying that they do sometimes not do the 50-50 thing and have, you know, especially if it's like singles wrestlers that are much better at singles, they win those matches, but then they can't come together as a team to beat the more team-oriented champions or what have you. So obviously this works here. It builds more of the feud for the pay-per-view, and you move on, you know. Shane, of course, if you've been living under a rock, there is a Fatal 5-Way happening at the pay-per-view with Charlotte, Natalya, Tamina, Becky, and Lana in that match. And Charlotte is backstage. Well, all the women are backstage here with Shane. And Charlotte talks about wanting to face Lana. Natalya, of course, basically mocks her and makes fun of her. Of course she'll want to fight Lana. Basically, everybody wants to fight Lana because she's the weakest link here. Right? I mean, all you need is for the lady from the weakest link to come on and let you know. You know, they could, I forgot what that's called, but they could just put her in there to let Lana know the obvious, basically. And, of course, Tamina has to come defend her. Go ahead.
Her name is Ann Robinson.
See, there you go. That's why I need I need Harry to remind me of these.
I'm just a massive game show mark.
See, I like some of the ones that, like, I like watching the Beat Shazam.
Likewise, me and Christine are really into that show. We have a couple episodes to catch up on when she comes up this weekend, though.
It's just really easy to, like, watch, and you get to listen to some songs for a while. I mean, it's fun to, like, realize how many songs you know or you don't know.
As far as SmackDown goes with this particular backstage segment, yeah, I don't think there's any question that they all viewed Lana as the weakest link going into this particular match, and I think that that's going to lead to something where Lana actually gets a couple of surprise victories on Sunday. But now that we know that the match is an elimination match, I stand by my prediction that I think Charlotte
is
walking out.
I love how they change that all the time. Like, some of these are straight Fatal 5-Ways, and then some of them just, they decide at the last minute, oh, let's make it elimination match. Obviously, this makes a lot of sense, like you said, to change it so that Lana can get some wins. But I just wish they would do that from the beginning. Charlotte Becky being made, though, I like that. I hope we get to see that as a feud down the line at some point.
Yeah, and I think once the women's title finds its way around Charlotte's waist, I think that is something that we are going to see.
It's got to be at some point. I do appreciate they delayed it this far, because I felt like as soon as she got there, they might want to just put it on her immediately. And I'm glad they've sort of held off and they've let Naomi have her time. Yeah, Naomi's title reign has not been anything to write home about, but they've not just gone to that Charlotte well. They've let other people shine. They've sort of built Becky back up with this. They've gone a kind of backwards way with Lana, but it's sort of been getting her attention as well. So I feel like most of them have been able to benefit from this. Do you like the way this is? I mean, because they've been in a lot of these multi-women matches, right, on SmackDown. Do you believe the feeling that I see a lot of people saying, oh, WWE just doesn't know how to book these women on SmackDown? Or
I don't think it's a case of they don't know how to book them. I think it's a case of them stalling to get to the singles matches. Like, they want to save the singles matches for the bigger pay-per-views.
I agree with that. I think we look at this and go, well, how many times have we seen a lot of these single matches from the women on Raw already? And at least you protect that a little bit on SmackDown. But then we got to remember before they did all the shifting, we had three women singles feuds on SmackDown for a while.
And the other thought process to that goes is that why give away a big money singles match between, like, say, Naomi and Charlotte to the extent that they actually have a defined finish, unlike the match where they had everybody get involved with on SmackDown? Why give away that on free television when you can use that as a pay-per-view match?
You're right about that, but WWE sometimes, when they feel like the ratings need it, sorry, I need to remove my dog that feels like every time I've got to record, he's got to sit there and scratch all the time.
Well, that's okay. He's a good boy.
He is. It's just, like, come on, man. You'll sit there quietly for, like, hours, and then when I'm talking, you've got to start doing that. But,
don't feel bad. My cat does it to me, too.
Or gets on, at least my dog does not get on top of things, but still. Anyway, so, yeah, I think a lot of people are just overblowing the whole, they don't want to book them into smart things. Everybody's got to be involved, and there's two ways to look at it, right? The way you're looking at it and the way of just, they don't have anything for them to do. It's just, well, if you blow through all your singles matches quickly, then you're just going to get retreads. I mean, you can always book these fiddle four and fives and everything else and have different finishes.
Well, it's the same reason that Raw had the fatal five-way number one contenders match for Extreme Rules. And yeah, a lot of that had to do with the Strowman injury. But when Raw had the fatal five-way at Extreme Rules, it was a match that people were excited to see because you knew it was going to be a gigantic cluster fudgesicle. And at the same time, you also knew that there were matches that could come out of said five-way that would be interesting as well. We got the Samoa Joe Brock Lesnar match, and we may get it again. We're going to get Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor at SummerSlam by the looks of things. So it's a way to help preserve the singles matches for bigger pay-per-views while still giving people something that they could be excited for the B-show pay-per-views.
Right. And hopefully that pays off here for SmackDown. Speaking of payoff, on Raw, we finally got the big payoff to the Kurt Angle looking at his phone, Corey Graves going in and saying things to him, and then, of course, the big tease from last week. Well, it turns out that Kurt Angle had a relationship when he was at university. She wound up being pregnant, and Jason Jordan wound up being a product of that relationship, and he just found out not too long ago, apparently, on Raw was their first meeting. And Chad Gable, of course, had the reaction that anybody would have on Twitter. What? And so, here we are. Chad Gable now gets to give his reaction to Renee Young about this whole ordeal. And he says that he knew nothing about it. And really, like, you're confiding in Corey Graves. You wouldn't confide in your tag partner? Literally lifted you out of nothing in NXT and helped make you the great team that you are? And, wow, I would feel betrayed if I was Gable.
Okay, I can actually refute that by saying that Corey Graves is on Raw where Kurt Angle is. Therefore, Corey Graves is his connection to Kurt Angle.
He's saying he confided him in Corey Graves said in NXT he became his friend and confided in him. I'm just saying, you're not going to tell Gable at all that you think that you're adopted and you might know who your dad is? I mean, come on now.
It's still real to me.
I'm just saying,
I don't have a refutable answer for that.
I mean, I also can't suspend my disbelief that far to believe in the Jordan and Angle thing, but
I can. They kind of look alike.
I would have.
Even Charmel posted the picture.
Yeah, I know, but I think she was obviously in jest putting that up there. But I think, look, I'm glad that they're finding different storylines to do and all that stuff. I just hope that it doesn't kill Jordan and it winds up going nowhere for him, because, you know, this is one of those things that can, like, sort of stick with you
if it Let me ask you this. Do you listen to Eric Bischoff's podcast?
Here and there. I haven't listened to the latest couple ones.
Well, on the most recent episode, he said that Kurt Angle's secret was going to be revealed to be Dixie Carter. My question to you is twofold. One, do you think it was supposed to be Dixie Carter? Two, do you think they shifted it because so many people thought that it was going to be her?
I do think that at one point Gable was supposed to be the son, and they might have shifted that. I thought they might do Dixie, but it was like one of those where, do they really want to bring in somebody from another company and all that stuff? Like, I don't know. I didn't go full hard on Dixie being the person. But she was in one of my, like, thought process that it could be her.
The best thing I can say about all this is it frees Chad Gable up for a singles push. And we kind of talked about the Gable-style singles match last week when I sat in with you guys. So I'm all for a Chad Gable singles push. It just kind of sucks if you're a tag team in the WWE right now, because clearly they don't give a crap about the tag division on either brand at this particular moment.
Yeah, it seems like Vince is just going through one of those, like, where I just don't care about tag teams right now. And so he's killing a lot of them, which doesn't help the Hardys or teams like the Usos that are brother tag teams. And at least the Hardys can split off and be fine. But, like, the Usos, Rowan and Harper at this point, like, what are they going to do?
Jay and Jimmy Uso get separated. They're going to end up doing Jack and Squat. Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder attempt to get separated. They're going to send us back to NXT.
Yep, exactly. It's not good for them to just kill these tag teams. Like, at least have something in their place, or if not, start pairing up singles guys that you're doing nothing with. Like, you know, Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel should be trying to go for tag team titles by now.
Well, the problem is with the tag team belts on a heel tag team, that's not really a viable option.
I know, but I'm just saying, like,
no, I agree.
Have them be in the division.
I agree, and I was actually all for the Hardys versus the Revival. I actually thought it was going to be for the Raw tag team titles, because I thought Cesaro and Sheamus were going to drop the belts at the last Raw pay-per-view, because Sheamus is leaving to film that movie.
Right. No, I just think, too, it's on SmackDown, that's been a problem since the beginning. Like, you've had the Ascension, they tried with Breezango for a little bit, they actually caught on with the Fashion Files, so they've just been having them do that. And I mean, I'm glad for them that they've caught on and been able to do something. I'd rather them do that than be doing nothing.
Well, I have a question about that, but I'll save it for when we actually get to that segment a little bit later.
But it's like American Alpha was doing nothing for a long time, just because I guess they, you know, the powers that be were like, well, these guys are not getting over like they did in NXT, and then we have nothing, we don't know what to do, and I have no idea when they started the whole thing with Kurt Angle, when they were going to seriously do this with Jordan or Gable or whoever, but...
Yeah, I doubt that it was thought that it was going to be Gable or Jordan when they first came up with this thing for Angle.
Right. How do you feel about the Mojo and... Like, I like Mojo as being the heel and everything, but it's also like, again, you're hurting your tag division of, you're going to split these guys too.
Well, I think that if the New Day end up taking the tag titles from the Usos, you can run the rematch with the Usos, and then you can have the New Day and the Ascension. And then it's back to what you do with the New Day. Yeah, and then it's back to what do you do with the New Day. At that point, you almost have to call up the Authors of Pain.
Oh my god, the New Day and the Ascension. We have hit the bottom of the barrel. Oof, let me tell you.
All right, I was going to save this. I was going to save this for later, but since we're going to have this conversation now, let's talk about the Fashion Files thing. They do the Fashion X Files, and hilarity ensues as per usual with these two. And at the end, they get a box, and inside of the box, it's the decapitated head of Fandango's pony, and a note that says "Battleground."
Seems like Harper and Rowan to me.
I like that, actually.
Or wait, isn't it? Rowan's SmackDown guy, right?
Or yeah, they're both on SmackDown. No, okay. They're both on SmackDown.
They need to be, because, like, they did nothing with... I mean, they tried with Harper, and then it seems like they just didn't really want to try with him. They were just giving him these, like, hope matches, and, you know, Rowan is what he is at that point.
Yeah, let's look back to the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view where he took on Randy Orton in what was one hell of a contest earlier this year.
It's just, again, it's like one of those, well, he has a certain look, and I don't know that he's can go very far at singles-wise, so let's put him back. And look, I'm not complaining. They need tag teams again. Just... And it does provide a nice contrast between those two teams as well. Again, the Fashion X-Files thing was really funny. I like the the Tony Chimmel, he's not a like great person or whatever it was that said. That was...
There were a couple on that board that made me chuckle. I missed the Chimmel one, but the R-Truth is out there one made me laugh.
Yeah. I think I can't play because Fandango would stand right in front of the board, so it was like hard to see some of them at times. But I just love the Mulder and Scully reference and the light coming on. And the livery guy comes in; they think he's an alien.
I really enjoyed the Aiden English cameo.
Yeah, that was great too. They thought he was a ghost. He's just... Oh, that's just English warming up. Well, hey, at least he got on screen.
Yeah, which is ironically how Creative feels about him. No big deal.
You know, I mean, look, I really appreciate that they take the time to come up with these things, and there is some depth there if you want it, and some nice little Easter eggs, and it feels like they really let them have their moment to think about what they want to do and do the segment and all that, and appreciated for SmackDown.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious as to how much of this is Breeze and Fandango and how much of it is the creative team, because I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of this is Curtis and Breeze.
Oh, I really can't think that the writing team really thinks a lot of that stuff that has to come from guys that love wrestling and know things.
I mean, the one person that I could definitely see helping with these segments is Michael Hayes.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
And especially since Hayes has been a victim of that fashion board before. Wanted for crimes against fashion, I believe, was the quote, and then it had a picture of like three different ones of his crazy outfits from the Hall of Fame ceremonies.
I do love that Dusty's apparently a fashion icon, though, if Michael Hayes is not.
That's because he's the American dream, if you will.
Yes, irony at its best there for Fendi.
Where were we? We've completely lost the plot for this episode.
Hey, we're following Fandango and Breeze for that. So, yeah, I mean, Gable basically sums up saying that he didn't know anything. He kind of figured that there was something going on with Jordan because he was being distant and all this stuff. He supports him, but hey, this works out in his favor because now he's on his own. And I think that's kind of all you needed to say, right? What are we looking at in the future? Oh, I'm by myself. you've seen me working against AJ Styles and some other guys. There's going to be more of that.
And if the singles matches he's had against Kevin Owens and AJ Styles are an indication, obviously good things are in store for Gable.
That's never been a problem for Gable, right? We know he's a terrific wrestler and can go in the ring and he makes things look really smooth. And he's actually a decent talker, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. He's incredibly charismatic as well, which is something I don't necessarily know that the WWE universe is as aware of as the NXT fans are. Him finally getting an opportunity to show that suaveness, that character personality, the natural charisma that he has as well, is going to do nothing but ingrate himself with the WWE universe or agitate them should they choose to go that route with him.
I'm kind of sad that I hope this means he's going to get to do the Ready, Willing, and Gable. But I have a feeling that Vince probably thinks that's stupid, so.
What are the odds he ends up getting paired with Shelton Benjamin?
I'd say highly at this point. You know, just take one guy, put him on Raw, and bring in another guy, and we'll see, you know. I wonder if they'll have any kind of Shelton-Kurt Angle interaction if they have him go to Raw or something. That would be interesting, certainly. So we finally get the debut of Mike Kanellis in the ring on the show. The match does not last very long at all. It goes about like 3 minutes. Sami Zayn pretty much controls this thing. Knocking Kanellis down with lariats when he tries to do anything. Basically, this is all set up so that Kanellis is really getting whooped, and then Maria comes in, gets in front of Kanellis on the buckle as Zayn's trying to do the haluva kick. It causes a big old stir, and then this allows for Mike to just whack Zayn in the face and then hit the big Samoan driver for Kanellis to get the win.
It was what it needed to be for it's really hard not to call him Mike Bennett.
Yeah.
It was what it needed to be for Kanellis' in-ring debut. I think that this point, though, I believe that it's kind of necessary for them to maybe do a rematch at the pay-per-view and let Mike get a more decisive victory if you're going to try to do anything with him in the mid-card scene over on SmackDown.
Oh, they're having another match at the pay-per-view. They need matches.
Well, there's already 6 announced for the pay-per-view, so...
Well, they always have at least 7 or 8, and they got a pre-show they could fill.
They did announce the 7th match today with the Breezango taking on whoever it ends up being behind the notes, as you said, Harper and Rowan. And based on the condition that horse came back in, Harper and Rowan would not surprise me in the least. Plus, we've seen them have some really good matches before, too. So,
right.
That being said, yeah, I think that you need a 7th match for the pay-per-view itself, even with the Punjabi Prison match, because those Punjabi Prison matches don't tend to go very long. I think the longest one was only like 16 minutes.
Yeah, and it's not just, they always have some kind of pre-show match. They want to give you a reason to watch that thing. I'm totally down with if they want to make that it or something else on the card. You could have Breezango and the team that we don't know go against them on the pre-show as well if they wanted. What do you think? Do you think you'd put Zayn and Kanellis there, or would you put something else?
I would put Zayn and Kanellis on the pay-per-view itself, because Kanellis is the new talent to SmackDown, and you're going to want to showcase him on his first pay-per-view.
I'd agree with you.
Let's be honest. The star of this whole situation is going to be Maria. It's a Sable Mark Murrow situation all over again. At the same time, though, Kanellis is more than capable of holding his own inside of the ring. I was a big fan of his work in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, but they've always done this sort of character with Kanellis, right? Of having Maria come in and interrupt his matches, or on the outside doing something, or, you know, whatever. It's not like she's been there in every single facet of whether it's ROH, whether it's, you know, TNA, whether it's WWE, she's done that. So this is no different. John Cena, I almost like wanted to change the channel here. Listen, I am an American. I don't have a problem. I with this stuff. It's like you get it too much from John Cena. If you didn't get this kind of thing all the time from John Cena, I think it would work well. Just basically America, okay? Like, America does all these great things. This flag is gonna fly. Just get ready for basically John Cena to win. And then Russo comes and attacks him. Gets the accolade on him. John Cena tries to fight out, but Rusev hangs on. This makes him look good, right? But we all know what's going to happen at the pay-per-view. Come on.
And if you didn't know what was going to happen at the pay-per-view, the fact that Rusev got the advantage tonight kind of pretty much telegraphed it. I want so much more for handsome Rusev.
Me too. I wish they wouldn't have just gone right back to this gimmick and to a guy that basically made him look terrible before. Just
as importantly, when we last saw the handsome one, he was feuding with Jinder Mahal over on Raw. What sense does it make not to continue that?
If you're not Dean Ambrose in The Miz, you don't get crossover feuds.
Apparently not. No, what's going to end up happening here, you know my reaction co-host, Tony. Tony has the quote here that I think completely sums up Cena's promo from tonight. Cena is basically the white Denzel Washington.
Yeah, basically.
He gets super serious when he has to, but everything he says kind of sounds the same regardless of the tone in which he's saying it.
Yes, I agree.
So this was just another example of that. I mean, I thought the promo, the crowd was definitely into the promo, so, I mean, props for that, I guess. But at the same time, I was more interested in the Rusev beatdown than I was in the Cena promo.
Oh, yeah, totally. That's what I was waiting for. It was like, is Rusev going to get to come out here at all? Because I hope it's not just this promo, because, man, that's really a big waste of 15 minutes. But
well, if it was just the promo, then I would say handsome Rusev had a better shot on Sunday. The fact that Rusev stood tall tonight, though, is kind of making me worried about just how badly this is going to go for him Sunday night.
I don't know how this doesn't wind up with John Cena against Jinder for the title. Where you go from one foreign guy to the next foreign guy. I don't see how you... It's like, that's just really obvious.
I hope they go the crazier route, though, and have Mahal actually beat Cena at SummerSlam.
I mean, that would be awesome. Just from a perspective of, like, wow, we did not expect that. They really did something special. Or they did something, a big surprise. I almost don't want... I mean, it is SummerSlam. It's a big event if he were to win
and
break the record there, but... You know.
I don't think Mahal's a big enough name for that 17th title win to come against. And I mean no disrespect to Jinder. He's done excellent work since he's been put into this position. But he's not a big enough of a name for Cena to actually break Ric Flair's record against, in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, but... Like... John Cena is the number one guy, so... I mean, you're putting up a big against a big name. No matter who he beats, he was already over that guy anyway.
Can I just state that I would like to see handsome Rusev challenge AJ Styles for the U.S. title coming out of Battleground?
I would love to see that as well. That would be, you know, that match would be really good, and I'd like to see the promos there. Those would be really good too.
Do you think they do Cena? Do you think they do Styles Rusev at SummerSlam, or do you think we're getting Styles and Shinsuke at SummerSlam? Because they kind of teased Styles and Shinsuke tonight on SmackDown.
Yes, they did. Basically, Shinsuke says that, hey, there's going to be one day where you will issue that challenge and I will answer.
And he pointed He pointed to the U.S. title as he said it.
Right. I think they've teased us a lot to where, and you don't have to, if WWE were smart, right, you could have them have one match at SummerSlam and then have them not touch each other again. And the Royal Rumble, you have them kind of have a stare down again. And then, or, you know, you could have them team up in the Survivor Series tag match or whatever, too, if you wanted. And then at WrestleMania, they have another match. I just don't want them to have a match and then, oh, the next, like, three pay-per-views, they have a match, too.
No, I think that this is something that they realized could be special just based on the sheer reaction the two of them got at Money in the Bank. And I would like to think that they will be smart enough to capitalize on that.
Me too. I mean, I don't have a problem if they go to it that fast. If they want to do it at SummerSlam is a big event. You should be Absolutely. Having big-time matches at those shows. It's a crossover event. It's in the New York area. You're going to have people flying in from everywhere. They're going to know those guys. You're going to get a big reaction for the match. Yeah.
Especially now that SummerSlam has become one of those three-night weekends, much the same mm-hmm. way the Raw after Mania has. Because right. now you have NXT TakeOver, SummerSlam, Raw all in the same building. And I think SmackDown's in Brooklyn as well this year.
Yeah, and like NXT has become its own. Like, that's their WrestleMania, is the Brooklyn show. So, you know.
So, I mean, it wouldn't exactly be a huge surprise to see them run this kind of a match there, because you got to think, starting the following Monday and Tuesday on Raw and SmackDown collectively, there's going to be call-ups from NXT after SummerSlam.
Yeah, I mean, you would think, but sometimes, you know, they make decisions to go the other way, but let's keep fingers crossed, I guess, for some people. And I did not mean that as a pun towards Nikki Cross, but, you know, make of it what you will. Charlotte and Becky did have their match. I thought this was actually good for the, you know, a little bit less than 10 minutes they got. Becky tried to go on for the disarmer a couple of times. She did hit the Vexploder. Charlotte got some big moves in there as well. I like that Becky won. She needed that.
Yeah, completely agree with that. I think it was definitely the right decision giving Becky the win here going into the five-way. I stand by my prediction, and I said it earlier, that I think Charlotte wins the five-way. But Becky's somebody else that's been kind of getting lost in the shuffle of the SmackDown ladies, and hopefully they can find something more to do with her than just having her be kind of that person that gets there and then can't quite get the job done, much the same way she found herself in the two Money in the Bank matches.
Right. I agree with you there. I think she's just so, like, you know, a spitfire. She's loved. I think you could have her sort of be that underdog role as well if you wanted to and have Charlotte win.
You mean like the female Sami Zayn?
Well, that was supposed to be Bailey, but they screwed that up. So, you know, somebody's got to take that role. I think also it would be great to have Charlotte be the champ, and you could still continue the Becky stuff there. So, you know, it's Charlotte has been losing. Usually when somebody's been losing like that, that means they're going to get a big win. Again, like I said, they've kind of held off on Charlotte being a and even when they've had her be a contender. Goodness gracious, did you go outside?
No, I turned some air back on over here. I'm starting to overheat. I apologize for that. It should be good now.
Okay. Totally understand. I don't want you to be overheating. It gets hot here. I can only imagine if it's getting hot in the Midwest. That's got to be crazy. So,
92 degrees today.
Oof. Sorry. We'll have to see what they decide on the pay-per-view, but it feels like Charlotte. I am intrigued about what... Do you think we ever get some kind of big reason for this Tamina and Lana thing, or...
I think that was something that they did just to give Tamina something to work with. I mean, at the same time, it would be interesting to see it have kind of a situation come out where Tamina's taking Lana underneath her wing, because Tamina is somebody that never really got the reaction from the crowd that Lana does. So maybe she feels like hooking up with Lana, associating herself with Lana, it'll improve her reactions.
Yeah, true. And, you know, Tamina can help her. Well, I don't know how much she can help her ring-wise, but... You know, you don't have to tell Tamina that.
That's a shoot.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about the two worst in, you know, SmackDown, certainly. Helping each other out there, but, you know.
Well, I feel Lana's got a lot of room for improvement. Unfortunately, I think we've kind of seen what Tamina's capable of.
Right. I mean, it's sad that other people hit her dad's splash better than her. But
she's... Let me run this thought by you, Sean, real quick here. You know she's been employed by the WWE now for 7 years?
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, let that sink in.
Well, like a year of that was injury, so...
Like 2 years of that has been injury, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. So the main event, AJ Styles and Shinsuke against Kevin Owens and Baron Corbin. I did like that they played off the Corbin trying to attack Shinsuke at the beginning and his entrance, and that backfired on him. But then the ultimate backfire was by the heels, who Nakamura kind of gets caught up in brawling, and then Corbin makes sure he puts Styles back in there, and... Then Owens blind tags himself in, gets a super kick, and hits a pop-up powerbomb for the win. Good thing that the heels won. Kevin Owens needs to look good going into this match as the challenger. AJ is retaining, obviously, and I'd be really surprised if Shinsuke doesn't beat Baron Corbin again, or they don't do some kind of count-out finish or something, but... Yeah, this is a good way for the heels to get a win going into the pay-per-view, and just solid match there.
Yeah, really strong main event, really good. As you mentioned, definitely good that Kevin Owens picked up the victory here, because let's be honest, Owens has kind of been showing his ass in regards to his results lately on SmackDown. I think there was something like a string of like 6 straight main events that he was in, he's lost.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to get the win in this particular match, and for him to get the win in this particular match, definitely gives him something of a psychological advantage going into the pay-per-view Sunday. I mean, I don't think there's any question Styles is retaining on Sunday, right. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that they want to freshen up the Kevin Owens character too, because the whole Face of America thing, as cool as it is and as cool as it has been, Mahal and Rusev are basically doing the same kind of gimmick.
Right. Yeah. No doubt. So, I mean, Kevin Owens is doing it the best, obviously, because he has the best mic skills out of the three. But, you know.
I don't know. I put Rusev up there with Kevin as far as mic skills goes. I think Kevin's a better trash talker, but I think Rusev's more entertaining on the microphone.
I don't know. I still think I would go with Owens overall on the three.
I got 3 simple words for you, Sean. Take the fish.
That's never not funny. But Owens, yeah, definitely. You've got the two evil foreigners, right? You don't need Kevin Owens to play that character. He's shown he can play other characters, whether he's the prize fighter, whether he's just a dick. You can do various things. I mean, just his tweet on the cancellation of Talking Smack, which this is the first week that we don't have Talking Smack, was wonderful. Just him taking the shot at Daniel Bryan and Renee Young for always having it out for him, or feeling like they do, was classic Kevin Owens. How do you feel about... Of course, Gary and Paul talked about this on the W2M episode I wasn't on. How do you feel about canceling a show that has helped a lot of that talent on SmackDown?
I can see both sides of this argument. I can see the side from the smart fan that's very entertained by it, because a lot of it's very tongue-in-cheek and anti-kayfabe.
Mm.
But at the same at the same time, I can also see the argument against it because of the fact that it breaks that fourth wall so thoroughly as well for most of the shows.
But I think that's what's nice, though. It gives a contrast to what you see on the show.
And not to mention, it's the opportunity to make people into something more than they become. I guarantee you, Miz doesn't become nearly as big as Miz is right now without his tirade against Bryan last year.
Oh, no. Yeah, Miz said it himself. And then not only that, Baron Corbin has been helped by getting mic time on these shows.
Jinder Mahal.
Jinder, the Usos. Pretty much everyone that's been on there, they get helped by being on that show and either just answering questions as a normal person. I mean, Mojo is getting his push because of the character that he got to show on that on Talking Smack. I think like Vince is just not seeing how you're getting these people to feel like they're real, like you can identify with them instead of being these cartoons and buffoons sometimes on your show, and because they're so scripted and they're just, it's, you know,
and therein lies the problem in the fact that we're in the reality era and the person in charge of the company is out of touch with said reality.
Yeah, like why even have Triple H go out there and name this the reality era? We're going to shy away from that. I mean, yeah, Talking Smack provided a way for SmackDown to be different. But hell, I really wish they would have made Raw Talk more of a regular thing for Raw. The problem was they always got the wrong guests and made them look stupid on there until Booker T came on and decided, okay, now we're going to challenge people.
It's like AJ said himself on Talking Smack. SmackDown makes them, Raw takes them.
Yep. And now we'll just have to rely on the shows again I remember watching all these Talking Smacks, and I would always come away with somebody that I really felt like I connected more with after watching the show, and now that goes away, and it just sucks.
And that's an opinion that your colleague over at 411, the guy who did the Talking Smack review, Robert Lighty Jr., he shares that same opinion in that no matter who the guests were on Talking Smack, you always felt more emotionally invested in at least one of their characters coming off the show.
Yeah, it's like the same thing of I care about Apollo Crews a heck of a lot more than I probably should because of Breaking Ground. And, you know, Nia Jax as well because she came off differently on that show. And just these, not everybody's going to get a WWE 24. And having small things like this allows you to understand the person behind that person. You've got to understand we're in a situation where kayfabe is dead. And people look to Twitter to get the real character and getting real thoughts from these people. And to see outside what we see on television and... I don't know why, if we're going back to Attitude Era storylines with some of these people, we're not going embracing that in other areas. Just whatever. I think I could wax poetic about this for a long time, but we need to put a rating on this show here. What'd you think?
All right, so I gave Raw 7.5 last night because I was very entertained by the show. I think SmackDown comes in tonight just a little bit behind Raw for this week for me. I'm going to give it a 7.
I'm going to go like 6.5. You didn't have anything memorable wrestling-wise. It was all there to kind of push the go-home, which I thought, again, it was a good go-home. It pushed all the buttons you needed to push. You set up a couple of more matches, possibly. You got the short debut of Mike Kanellis to kind of let you know what he's going to be doing. And I think that's what you needed, sort of. In some places, it just kind of felt like a show, especially the Cena and Rusev stuff. But yeah. So I think that's it for this week, talking SmackDown. Make sure you check back with us next week. We'll be talking about the post-Battleground show, which should be interesting. As most of the post-pay-per-view shows do provide some nice fallout most of the time. And of course, go ahead.
Not to mention, this is going to be the first SmackDown on the official road to WrestleMania, or on the official road to SummerSlam as well, excuse me.
Yes, that may also provide more things for SmackDown, as well as already building to SummerSlam. SmackDown getting a little later of a push, but they're going to be doing it the next show. And, yeah, make sure you check out our other single review shows, of course, 205 Live, that we're going to do in a little bit. Paul and Gary did Raw already, and, of course, Paul and Gary will also do NXT as well. Paul and I, as long as he doesn't fall asleep, will be doing Night 1 of the G1, which returns on Thursday with Night 2, and then they go straight into from Thursday to Sunday. So we will not get a break for a while on the G1. And, of course, Harry, you do a show for us here on the WWE Network, Wrestling Unwrapped. They did Progress Chapter 36, which was cool. It's their first talking about UK promotions on that show. And, of course, you host another show.
We're going to be taking a trip back over to England a little bit later on in the year when we cover Revolution Pro as well. Another show that I do as well, in addition to doing Wrestling Unwrapped here, we're on a hiatus for this week due to me not being home because I'm doing a diabetes benefit show on Sunday night, so I won't be watching the pay-per-view live. But we hope to be back in our normal time slot on the 30th, show still to be determined. The talk and the rumors are that we're going to be covering PWG's DDT 4 2015. Our first trip into a more modern era of pro wrestling guerrilla. The other show that I do is YesWrestling.com's Raw Reaction. That is with 411 Mania's Tony Acero and Wrestling to the Max member Robert Taylor. And we cover all parts of Raw in addition to how Gary and Paul break it down here for W2M. Our show goes live immediately after Raw at 11:30. And we're usually off the air in time for you to be able to listen to Paul and Gary live as well if you'd like to. So by all means, feel free to check that out at YesWrestling.com or by checking us out at blogtalkradio.com/prowrestling.biz.
Yeah. The thing is here that always listen to these guys on the Raw Reaction. They do a great job. Robert also does a show for us that he just started a couple weeks ago, MMA to the Max. So he loves his MMA. He talks with his cousin Joe. Y'all need to check that out if you're MMA fans. You can listen to it here on the W2 Network. And of course, if you subscribe to the W2 Network, you get all of our great content that we have over there. And of course, visit W2Net.com for the podcast and all of our written stuff. Mae Young Classic is coming up, and Patrick is going to be doing previews for those. So you want to check that out and get short blurbs on all of the competitors.
Can we break some news here about the Mae Young Classic?
We already did that on the other show, so it's
all right,
fine.
Well, it's out there then. Yeah, I will be becoming an official part-time member of the W2M crew for the Mae Young Classic as well. Myself, Patrick Ketza, and Paul Leeser will be your three-man crew covering the Mae Young Classic show, starting with the first set of releases on August 28th.
Yeah, so lots for you guys to look forward to. So until next week, we'll see you later, everybody.
The following podcast is a W2M Network original production. Visit W2Mnet.com for all of our other great podcasts, plus news, reviews, articles, and opinions from the worlds of wrestling, video games, football, and entertainment.